Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to Books, Beach and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Robert Pisani. Now, Robert, you're a school librarian.
Yeah.
Which school do you work at?
I work at the Archbishop Seminary in the primary section.
Okay. That must be the best books ever.
Well, yes. Well, the most colourful and entertaining ones, yes.
Beautifully illustrated. Yes. Oh, what lovely books do you have up there, do you?
Oh, there's so many. Well, we've got the classics. Let's say like Dr. Seuss and so on, which the kids still like. They love them still. With that, I'm amazed that they stood the test of time. And then they have the new ones. Let's say Oliver Jeffers.
Okay.
Who's he has these surreal stories, mostly about kids and penguins or kids and aliens and things like that. But they're beautifully drawn. The kids like him a lot. And there's one called Susan Hendra, who's a series of called Barry, and it's about a fish who has actual fingers, fingers.
Fish with fingers.
Yes. It's fish fingers.
Okay. That's the thing with children's books. Really, the imagination has just run wild. I'm really envious of people who can write for children, actually. It doesn't have to make sense. It just does make sense somehow. And the message is in them. I think we could still learn as grown-ups, actually. So what sorts of... Do you get to sort of sit and read books all day as a librarian? Is that?
Oh, that's the common myth. That's only a bit of my job. Let's say this, if I buy a children's book, I'm going to read it beforehand because I've got to read it out to them, so I have to know what's in it and so on and which expressions to use. But then a lot of the job requires, it's almost a management position, which means I have to teach the kids other skills, let's say how to use a dictionary, how to use the internet properly for research and so on.
So, but you said you read to the kids, so there are sort of reading sessions as well.
Of course,
fantastic.
Yes. It's a half and half thing.
That used to be my favourite time at school. We used to lay down and have story time. Oh, why can't we do that at work?
I do it with my kids. So my school children.
With your school children.
With pupils, yes.
No, I think it's just the best time ever. Yeah. And you're sort of trying to instil the love of books and reading within them and the fact that the internet, everything there, pretty much came from a book.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what they need to know. Mm-hmm. In case there's ever no power, you can still find information in a book.
It's true. Well, in fact, there's a children's story called Is This a Book? And it's about this monkey and this donkey. And the donkey can't understand the concept of the book. You know, he keeps on thinking there's a space bar with buttons. And then he finally reads it. It's actually Treasure Island. Oh. And then he gets amazed and that's it. He's totally lost. And then he finally asks if there's a power cord.
Oh, sweet. You're not going to make me go into one to have a look at that one. So if you don't get that much chance to really read at work, when do you find time to read?
Okay, I have a scheduled time. Usually in the morning, that's my best, early morning. That's when I'm at my most alert, actually.
Okay.
Just a bit before work, on my commute as well. I read. It's not a very long one, but still I can get a few pages in. Every opportunity, if I'm in the bank, I'm going to read. If I'm waiting for someone,
definitely in the bank, because that takes time, doesn't it?
Exactly.
So you always have a book with you?
Yes, always.
Okay. Or two. What book have you got with you now?
At the moment, I've got... obviously, out there in Radioland, no one can see it, but...
Ta-da! Out of the magic hat. So you literally read whenever you find a minute?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Sometimes, let's say Sundays is my best time because I'll have maybe a couple of hours free and I'll be able to really focus and get 100 pages in. At the moment I'm reading this book, it's called The Long Forgotten. It's a relatively new book.
Beautiful cover.
Yes, in fact, it's got a whale. I'm a sucker for whales in books.
Okay.
You can
see.
Because a whale has one of the main details in the book. It's about three people. One's a botanist, the other one is... he works in an emergency call center, a bit like a British version of 911.
Okay.
And then another one cleans up houses after dead people. I mean, after they're deceased, He has to keep the house empty so the new family can move in. Okay. And they're all connected by a flower, this purple flower. I'm only a few pages in, so this is getting interesting.
It's getting interesting. It's an interesting mix of characters already, though.
Yes, definitely.
And you've met them all already in the book.
They're all yes, everything's been explained. Their backstories have been established.
Okay.
Now it's how their destinies connect.
Okay.
This is the type of book I actually like, the ones I tend to gravitate. I like, it's kind of like the Tarantino thing. You've got all these different strands and they're all linked through one detail. Here it's a flower. The whale, by the way, because there's a botanist who's exploring plants underground.
Okay.
And the black box recorder is actually inside a whale and he manages to catch that.
Catch the whale to get the black box recorder.
Yes. But I don't know the importance of that yet.
Okay.
It hasn't been explained.
We'll maybe get you back on the show to talk and tell us what it's all about at the end. So how do you get attracted to a book? What actually makes you pick up a book? Because for me, the cover's beautiful in itself.
No, it's basically a description. I do have a favorite type, and I see the blurb, and if that kind of gets me, I say, yeah, okay. In this case, there's a series, I wouldn't say a series, there are people who talk about books on the internet. It's called BookTube. It's on YouTube. And basically, the publishers give them lots of free books so that they can actually promote them. And that's where I
get a lot of your insight, what's coming up. Uh-huh. Do you know what's coming up, what books haven't been published yet as well, or do you only get to find out books that are already on the shelf?
No, most of these booktubers get books maybe 2-3 months ahead.
Okay.
So
you can salivate for a few weeks before the next batch.
Exactly, a few weeks. There's one that's coming out in 3 months, and I have to wait that long.
It's a bit like when you see these, the Star Wars movies, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Have to wait 9 months, and by then they've sort of almost written the story for themselves. What's going to be happening? I'd go nuts. I think if I knew there was a date, it was coming out. In a sense, you want them to hurry up and write. But on the other hand, have you got favorite authors?
Yes, I do have a favorite author. One, I do have my staples. Because he has a new book out, there's Haruki Murakami, who I like a lot. He has a new book coming out in October.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be in two parts. So one part this year, the next part this year.
Tease,
I don't know if they combine.
What a tease.
I know. But I'm not sure. So maybe, hopefully, it's just one volume. I like Haruki Murakami. I've read all of his fiction.
Okay.
I like Jonathan Coe a lot. He's a very good author. There's one other author I do like, Ali Smith. She's a big favorite. She can do no wrong.
Okay.
At all. She's faultless.
Faultless. Uh-huh. So have you got a very favorite book that you keep rereading or that you keep recommending?
Yes. One book I'm always recommending is What to Carve Up, which is kind of it's my favorite book of all time. It's by Jonathan Coe. It is absolutely brilliant because it's an everything book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mystery. It's a political thriller. It's black humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's also screwball comedy. Everything. No, everything is in it.
So what's it called again?
What to Carve Up. It's about this man who has to write a biography about a corrupt royal family during the Thatcher era. And the thing is, he gets so absorbed that he becomes insane. And he doesn't know what's reality and what isn't. And it's also a murder mystery because someone keeps on dying throughout the whole... So people keep on dying throughout the whole book.
So it's the sort of thing that just sort of makes you laugh and want to stay awake to keep...
Yes. It's, morbidly funny. Yes, but it's good.
That's good. It's a bit slapstick.
Yes, it is. In fact, it's called What a Carve Up because... And it does exist because I checked it out. There is I wouldn't call it... a kind of dirty film of that era, of the 60s, called What a Carve Up. And one of the characters in the book is directing it. Obviously the director is fake, but the film actually does exist. So,
what's it, art imitating art, life, whatever?
Yeah, whatever, yeah, something like that.
What other books would you recommend as really sort of good fun, interesting reads?
Then I really like one birthday present I constantly give people is, it's called A History of Tractors in the Ukraine. Yeah, no, it's amazing. It has nothing to do...
I'm glad this is radio because I'm sure that face was not attractive, sorry.
No, it has nothing to do with that. Okay. I forget Monica Lewka, I think her name is. It's basically about Polish history, but done in a very interesting way. A very old man, a Polish immigrant, gets a very young Polish, buxom wife, And it's really a criticism on the generations of Polish people. As they lived through the war, they had to starve and so on. And this younger one doesn't understand that, so it's a clash of cultures.
Okay.
It's very, very good, and it's very funny. For example, this old man doesn't understand I mean, he makes apples in the microwave and he calls them Toshiba apples and so on. It's very sweet. But it's very intelligently done because it's a criticism on attitudes.
Was it written by somebody Polish as
yes,
well?
Yes.
Because otherwise first generation. Taken the other way. Uh-huh. So that's one you give us presents. What's that?
I
again?
Always do.
Tractors?
A history of tractors in Ukraine.
Okay.
Because the tractor was a new... because after the war, the tractor kind of revolutionized farming over there because they were... Yeah, they are, actually. Yes, exactly.
I don't know why they don't make great cider, but they... That's just my...
when I went to Krakow this February, I had very good cider.
Oh, okay. Because they seem to have hidden it from me. I shall go back. And what else? What's another book that you... kind of enjoy, or you just... Mm-hmm.
As presents, Murakami gets... You see, Murakami also has an anthology called Birthday Stories, so it's perfect for actually giving people, and they're really good, giving people on their birthdays.
And then, is that funny again, or is it slightly...
There's some that are funny, some are tragic, some are good. No, it's a very good mixture.
Is he Japanese?
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of Japanese writers becoming much more popular.
Yes,
actually, I don't know... if it's something to do with publishing deals or something, but suddenly there seems to be a real influx of...
Probably, and African ones are making are also appearing on the market, lots of them. There are quite a few that...
I know the last couple of BBC play rights, the competition they have has been won by African playwrights, actually.
Yes, there was one that was, I forget completely what the prize was called, but there was won by an African poet.
Yeah, so there is a lot of this emerging into our... conscious, which is fantastic, actually, that we have such a spread. How do you buy your books?
Mostly a book depository.
Okay.
I also have a book blog, though, and, I'm getting some freebies.
Ah.
Yes, that's nice. I'm requesting them.
They have these press copies, don't they? So for you to read and be able to critique.
Yeah, exactly. As long as I review them, I mean, it's not just...
There's still work.
It is work, but it's also fun and, I'm getting something that I requested and I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that pleasure in that as well.
But how do you feel about when you start reading a book and you just can't get into it? Do you keep with it?
No. I have a rule, 50 pages.
Okay.
And if I don't like that, that's it. The book is abandoned. But I'll come back to it. That's one thing I learned. I'll come back to it after a year or 2 years, even three, because things change. What I learned is that books need a certain moment. And if you're not in that right moment, they can just be bad.
Hmm.
A lot of my favorites, some of my big favorites, are ones that I did not like first time round, and I picked them up after 5 years or so.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then, right time of life or whatever, and it just suddenly resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
So have you got one that you've recently picked up and put down?
That's good, actually. Exactly. I've been quite lucky. I've had a very good streak these past 2 months.
Okay. What else have you read recently? Mm-hmm.
One book I read recently was called The Job of the Wasp. I didn't mind that. It's by a very, very small press. Because actually those are, believe it or not, even though financially they're weaker, they like giving out free copies because the word of mouth spreads easier with them.
And I suppose they can be more liberal with their choice of authors.
Yes.
As well.
In fact, the more experimental books are coming from small presses. Mm-hmm. The more interesting things, definitely, without a doubt. Anyway, this book is about this student, and he joins a school, he's accepted, and he starts finding out that bodies are appearing everywhere.
Dead bodies?
Yes, dead ones.
Okay.
But the trick is, we don't know if he's doing it or if it's a coincidence. So it was a very frustrating book, but it kept me, it kept me going because I had to see how he was going to pull it off. In my opinion, I don't think it was 100%. It didn't work 100%. But as an experiment, it was an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
The last book I really, really enjoyed was probably Manhattan Beach by Jennifer Egan. That was really, really good.
Okay.
It's about a diver. Actually, more than that. It's about a girl who goes with her father to visit a man.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, this man influences her whole career without her knowing it.
Ah.
And it's very well written.
And so what's the story about how he influences or about her career?
Mostly about her career. It's how little details can actually affect your future.
Mm.
How someone you can meet as a child can actually influence you when you're grown up without you even knowing it.
Yeah.
Because then her father disappears.
Okay.
And it's all linked to this one person she met when she was a child.
Hmm.
And all the clues are there. It's very cleverly done.
Manhattan Beach.
Yes. I really, really enjoyed reading that.
Yeah?
And all takes place, in Manhattan. Yes.
There is a beach in Manhattan. Is that a
question? Yes, there is. Yes. In fact, the main action takes the first part in the book takes place near a beach. That's where she meets this man.
Okay. She's a little girl.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. She's, I think, 9 years old or something like that.
Because you imagine we are influenced by people that we meet. Mm-hmm. You want to look like someone, sound like someone, drive the car that someone has, whatever. So
yes.
Is it along that sort of line, or is it much deeper?
It goes a bit deeper than that.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really well done. It's really well done. And then there's Ali Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I read she's doing a quartet of books about the seasons. And she just published Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fabulous. Not even better than the previous one, Autumn.
Okay.
It's basically a political story criticizing the British government and the British attitude. For example, Autumn is, you could say, the very first post-Brexit book.
Okay.
On the market at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's about how the British have an attitude, a racist attitude, which didn't leave. It was always there, despite the fact that we live in 2000. This book was in 2017.
Uh-huh.
Despite the fact we live in 2017 and we're in a global economy,
mm-hmm.
her point is that history never changes. And then winter is like the winter of discontent. It makes it worse. You know, Ali Smith, she is a genius.
Yeah.
She's very playful. And she has a way with words, and she puts puns, and she puts drawings.
Okay.
But it all links up. Again, she's an everything author. There's music, modern music, classical music, modern composers. And then she puts art, and then there's feminism.
Mm.
And it's dazzling.
Do you always have traditional paper books, or do you listen to audiobooks and Kindle and things like that?
No, I've never used an audiobook.
Okay. So.
Kindle I did try once, but I didn't gravitate towards it, but I prefer the physical.
The turning the page and the smell of the book and all of that stuff.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not a Kindle. I like audiobooks, but Kindle I've just never really got the hang of. I mean, people keep saying to me, no, because it's great, because you can make the text bigger, which is something that's becoming important to me, but no, I still like a book. I'll just have it further away from me if I can't see the text. So tell us some more. You've got lots of recommendations.
Oh, well, another great one I read is an Australian book called The Natural Way of Things. That impressed me.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost scary. It makes The Handmaid's Tale seem like a kid's novel or something like that.
Okay.
It's about this, these, I think there are four or five women who, I read a lot of feminist novels, it's just something I enjoy, who are captured and thrown in a prison and are maltreated, by this male. And then in the end, they get their revenge. And the book is about how each one copes with this situation. I mean, some get dirtier, some are looking to be clean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end of the book, what happens is that, spoiler, a person.
No, tell us.
They get saved, and this person gives them a makeup bag each, and then that's. So exactly. Mm. So you know, she gives mixed messages, except for one who abandons, and she lives in the prison on her own. She doesn't want to stay with the rest of them.
Okay. And what's that called again?
It's called The Natural Way of Things.
Because I've got a friend who would really enjoy that straight away.
Then another big favorite. I want to start gifting this one, actually, when you said the opportunity is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
Oh, it's so good. When we talk about food reviews, my very first restaurant I had to review was called Rebecca's.
Okay.
And I called it On the Road to Mandalay.
Okay.
But yes, that's a beautiful.
It's amazing. I don't think there's a book like it. I'm in awe of that. I'm very jealous. If I could write, I wish I could write something like that.
Ah.
Because, I mean, the thing is, the two main characters are, well, one is dead.
Yeah.
And the other one's a house. So there you go. And they're so alive, you know.
Yeah.
And you've got an unnamed narrator as well in the process.
I have a fantasy that one day I'll be good enough to write a book about, I had a house down in Birgu, and it was a house that was built in slices. So the first floor was built, in the 1500s, the second floor was built, and in about the 1800s, it was bombed in the Second World War, and after that they fixed it. And so I have this idea, but I'm not good enough to do it yet, to write about the family that lived there through all of those ages for the different things that happened to it. So
There's a book that's very similar.
Ooh,
It's by an Australian called Tim Winton.
Okay.
And it's called Cloud Street. And it's all about a house in a street that lasts for, I think, a century.
Uh-huh.
And about the different families and different time eras.
Okay.
It's really good. It's very well written.
Did you ever read The Sword and the Scimitar, the novel, not the
academic? No, I haven't.
That's a really sort of nice way to ease yourself into Maltese history. Obviously, you know Maltese history, but for tourists, whatever. And there's a character called Maria in the book. And the way they describe where the house was, I am convinced it was my house. Absolutely convinced it was my house.
Okay.
So that was where I thought that Maria must be my ancestor. And that, I know she's fictional. But she, you know, there must be a way of, you know, all the different nationalities and the different histories and all of those things that happened in Malta of carrying on this sword and the scimitar almost through the war and whatever. But yeah, one day when I'm, you know, grown up enough, I'll try that.
life plan, bucket list.
Yeah, another day, another life, I think, probably. Mm. But I don't think I've got the skill to do it yet. Mm. Hopefully one day it will be bestowed upon me.
Yes.
There we go.
Good luck.
Anyway, tell us more about some more books that you
have. Well, I really like it when Malta's mentioned in books, because you'll be surprised how many times it gets usually a passing remark more than anything in fiction. Then, you know, oh yeah, national pride here, you know, just... For example, Philip Roth, the Jewish-American author, mentions Malta in one of his books, The Plot Against America, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It reimagines America being run by the pilot Lindenberg, who was a Hitler sympathizer.
Okay.
And he says, what would happen to America if he was the president? And there's one bit where the children go to the cinema to get news updates, and then there's a bit about Malta being bombed. Well, actually, that's really interesting. There's one book called The Bone Clocks. It's a sci-fi novel.
Mm.
And there's one... it's fantastic.
Sci-fi,
it's
just,
really good.
I just
it's
really can't good. Do sci-fi.
It's really good. I mean, the thing is, I just open myself to any genre because you never know what you know. Sometimes
true.
It can be... I mean, I don't like it when sci-fi... At this point, anyways, maybe in the future will be different. I don't like it when sci-fi gets too technical and assumes you know everything. Mm. I do like a bit of an explanation behind it. This one's good, though. It's The Bone Clocks is about... these two people who jump through time.
Oh, that's different. That I like.
It's still sci-fi. Thank God. So there you go.
But it's gentle because it's real people rather than
exactly.
You know, aliens and stuff. I'm not very good at making up different beings.
Oh, okay.
That bit I can't really get my head around. It really freaks me out with the humans I know. So to know another type of human would be no. Or a non-human, should I say. So others?
Oh, yeah. In the Bone Clocks, it's about these people who jump through time because there's a sort of person who wants to assassinate another person, but in a magical way. But there's one bit where they're in Switzerland, and this guy, there's this one sentence, and he says, "There I was, sipping my cheap Maltese beer." Sometimes we're not spoken favorably, but so as I mentioned, there's one detective novel that takes a big chunk of it takes place in Valletta. It's called The Kills. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. It's a big thick
monster
novel.
Of a...
Yeah, it's a doorstopper.
Okay, and is that like multiple murders kind of?
No, it's one murder, but it's a worldwide chase.
Ah, okay.
And the main detective's in Valletta, and he's on his balcony at a boutique hotel, and he's having this, you know, Maltese sausage, and he's... You know,
observing
life
underneath.
So you
really mustn't come here then, because you wouldn't have known about Maltese sausage otherwise. But that's a good...
It's good, yeah, if you can take a chunkster like that. Yeah.
Now, how long, you said you read about 100 pages on a Sunday, but then in the mornings you read before you go to work?
Yeah, maybe about 20 pages, something like that,
And do you read again in the evening, or is it once you're home you're...
I try squeeze in, but usually I'm a bit tired, so my attention won't, you know, I like to focus completely on the book. Maybe I'll get another 20 pages in.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I don't think I've ever met somebody who reads before their day starts.
No, it's good.
So I've never even... It sounds stupid because I wake up, you know, before God, I like to say, because I wake so early. But I don't really leave the house till 9 or 10. But I don't know what I do in that time. I could probably read rather than the nonsense that one does get up to. But yeah. Okay. And you have a couple of more, we can squeeze in a couple more recommendations
from
you there.
I'm so ready. There's Donna Tartt. I really enjoy her books.
Okay.
She has three. One is really bad, but the other two are excellent.
tell us what the two good ones are.
Yeah, the two good ones is The Secret History, which is, it's mind-blowing. This one I'm always recommending as well, and I've never met a person who hated it.
Okay.
That has 100% success.
Okay, so The Secret History.
Yes, it is marvelous. It's about a group of college kids Well, one college kid, he's very cynical, and he meets a group of children, other college kids who are taking ancient Greek, or classical studies, I should be more specific. And then what happens is he finally joins them, and they commit an action, which leads to many more actions, which were worse than the last one, until you've got the final conclusion. Ah. That's all, I'll keep it there. Her third novel, The Goldfinch, is even better, in my opinion. See, Donna Tartt releases a book, publishes a book every 10 years.
Okay, so it's really, you have to wait. So how long ago was the last one?
The last one was 2015.
Oh, so quite a ways to go. Yeah, but I think you've got quite a few books left on your list to read.
No, tons. That's a problem more than,
So your idea of perfect day would just be to good book.
Yes, sit down and reading.
Yeah? With no one around you, no interruptions, food delivered.
Yes, yes, more or less, yes, something
like that, yes. That would be ideal. One last really lighthearted, fun book to take to the beach. What would you suggest that's kind of quite current or quite classic?
Okay, I can mention some light novels, yes. Mm-hmm. There's Three Things About Elsie by Joanna Cannon. That's very good. It's a very good beach read.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one I was saying, this would be a good beach read as well. It's very light, but you know, well done. I mean, you can have a light novel, and it could still be, you know, worth reading. You know, it doesn't have to be fluffy.
No, I think you can take the characters with you, or happens. Yeah.
Exactly, as long as it's well written, really. Yeah. Three Things About Elsie, I would definitely suggest, by Joanna Cannon, definitely. There was another one I was saying. Yes, I wouldn't mind reading this. The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock. That would be good as well. That's a good brief.
Where do these titles come from? So abstract. So The Mermaid of Mrs.
The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock.
And Mrs. Hancock.
It's a book that takes place in the 16th, no, not sorry, the 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, basically a businessman is given a mermaid, but it's...
As one does.
Yeah, exactly, by a sea trader.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, as he displays it, he falls in love with a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
This is a prostitute, though, it's a bit before this French, it takes place in Britain, it's 1780, so 9 years, 9 years before the French Revolution. Uh-huh. And what happens is that the whole book, it's a bit of a soap opera, but it's fun, it's a romp, that's all I'll say. Lot of bawdy, really bawdy bits in it, but it's good. For what it is, it's good.
And mermaids got to be a great thing to take to the beach with you, no?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
So I've been talking to Robert Pisani about books to take to the beach and beyond, and you've been listening to me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach, Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Brett for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach, Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.